It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Today, North Texans honored and remembered the five police officers who were killed last July 7th when a gunman opened fire on a peaceful protest in downtown Dallas. There were prayers, speeches, and tributes on the one-year anniversary. Another commemoration is set to begin in about 10 minutes at Dallas City Hall Plaza. Late this afternoon, Dallas police updated reporters on the investigation into exactly what happened July 7th, including how police eventually killed the shooter. KERA's Christopher Connolly attended the press conference, and he talked with Eric Austin.
First off, Chris, police say they are close to wrapping up this investigation.
The Dallas police say they anticipate that early next week they'll be ready to hand over the investigation to the Dallas County District Attorney's Office. From there, the DA will basically review it, and then they'll present it to a grand jury.
Now, why does this have to go to a grand jury?
It's standard procedure every time the police use lethal force that the case gets handed off to the district attorney to be presented to a grand jury. It's up to the grand jury to determine whether that use of lethal force was justified. And one of the things that they're going to consider, likely, is the use of a robot armed with a bomb to set off and explode and kill Micah Johnson, the shooter. It's considered to be unprecedented as a tactic in American law enforcement. Police officials say, you know, they believe that it was the right call, that this was justified, and if they hadn't ended the standoff, that more officers, possibly civilians also, could have been killed.
So why has this investigation taken so long? It has been a year.
Well, there was a lot to do. This was a huge crime scene to begin with because the shooter was moving around. Investigators interviewed more than 240 people, mostly police officers. They reviewed hundreds of video files, body cam footage from police officers, cell phone videos, private surveillance. And the police say that that took thousands of hours. Sometimes they were going frame by frame to get details. There was also a ton of physical evidence, hundreds of shell casings from the scene, and, you know, the weapons that were used by both the shooter and the officers who fired back. And even the bodies of the officers who were killed had to be processed. So, you know, all of this, it was pointed out, was while officers doing the investigation were grieving for their colleagues.
You asked police during the press conference about what they're doing differently now. What lessons have they learned?
David Pugh, he's the interim chief of the Dallas Police Department. There were a few things that he pointed to. For one, the department is investing in heavier body armor that can handle the kind of high-power rifle rounds like the ones used on July 7th. Some officers have also bought their own heavy-duty vests after the attacks. And then there's also money coming from the Texas legislature to help departments buy more of those vests. Pugh said he thinks the department will be applying for some of that funding. He also said that the way that they manage protests has changed in the aftermath. He said, you know, it's always a tension between protecting people's rights to protest and, you know, demonstrate, but also protecting police officers, keeping them safe. Pugh says officers now can choose to wear more of that kind of tactical gear when they're working protests. The department avoided that before because it might make them look militaristic or create kind of an adversarial environment that police were there to combat protesters. Since the attack, he says the department has rethought that strategy, and, you know, it's up to officers to choose whether or not they do that. He just wants to make sure that officers are safe.
Chris Connolly, thanks so much.
Sure thing.
Today, on a special episode of Think, we look back at the July 7th shooting. We heard from former Dallas Police Chief David Brown and Kim Cole of the Next Generation Action Network, which organized the protest. We start with John Abbott, a police officer at El Centro College. He was wounded in the attack.
Honestly, I did not know that I had been what we're, I guess, terming as being shot at this point. I think it was more of a ricochet or some fragments. I just wanted him, the guy that did this. I mean, there was no fear. There was anger. The best way to describe it would be anger. I wanted the guy that did this. That was all I was thinking about.
There's an issue in this country with regard to the use of force against people of color. And certainly the way that law enforcement responded to Micah X. Johnson demonstrates that. And what he did was horrible and completely inexcusable. However, the role of law enforcement is to apprehend people who are violating the law and to enforce the law. Their role is not to be the judge, jury, and executioner.
Protesters that night, when they heard the bullets ring out and the officers down bleeding to death, began running away. And cops, men and women in blue ran toward gunfire. And officers who, before the shooting rang out, were being protested by people who were complaining about how they did the job, became human shields for these very protesters. Who does that? That is the nobility of policing in this country.
That was former Dallas Police Chief David Brown, Kim Cole with the Next Generation Action Network, and El Centro Police Officer John Abbott. You can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera. This episode of Think Re-airs tonight at 9 and again on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Almost any state can boast about the music it's given the world. Still, longtime music critic Michael Corcoran says Texas stands out. He's written a book about the state's musical heroes. In this week's State of the Arts, Art and Seek's Hadi Mulwambi was surprised to learn that Willie Nelson isn't one of them.
T-Bone Walker, Waylon Jennings, and Lydia Mendoza. Legends like these shaped the sound of Texas. Michael Corcoran is the author of All Over the Map, True Heroes of Texas Music, and he says the Texas sound is the product of generations of integration.
Texas was the first state in the Union to have large populations of both African Americans and Mexican Americans. The Mexicans brought the guitars to Texas, and they taught the people in the fields, you know, blacks, whites, they had to play guitar, and so there's a different style. What you hear like in Floyd Tillman or Willie Nelson, it's almost a Spanish style.
You can hear that Spanish-style guitar in many of Willie's songs.
Someday when we meet up yonder, we'll stroll hand in hand again.
Corcoran spent the better part of the last decade digging into history books and research libraries in Austin to write All Over the Map. In 2005, he used the same title for a published collection of newspaper columns. But he says that first attempt at telling the story of Texas music wasn't what he wanted it to be.
Back then when I was working for the paper, you know, you'd have to go review a Sarah McLachlan concert and then, you know, write about Janet Jackson's new album or something like that. And then you might be able to get a little bit of research done. But in the last, I'd say, 10 years, I've been strictly doing research on music history. And so along the way, I've learned so much that I didn't know the first time around.
He learned that the migration of Germans and Czechs during the 1850s helped to bring about the large outdoor dance halls of Central and Southeast Texas. And those dance halls became integral to how Texas music was performed.
These large dance halls were bigger than any other venues around the country where bands played. And so in Texas, you had to play louder, you had to play with electricity, you had to bring drums in.
One of the most startling things about this book, there's no chapter about Willie Nelson.
In the first book, I had a chapter on Willie Nelson. But the idea of the book, The True Heroes of Texas Music, is really about unsung heroes of Texas music.
So Corcoran turned his attention to another musician from Abbott, Texas, Willie's sister, Bobby Nelson. She's played piano with her brother almost every day for 80 years. Not only is she herself a great musician, she has a unique perspective on the redheaded stranger, kind of like looking at the sun from Venus instead of Earth.
She was telling me about how when she was 6 years old and Willie was 4 years old, and their grandparents showed her how to play piano, and they showed Willie the chords on the guitar, and they both started playing together, and they looked at each other, their eyes lit up, and they saw the magic of the music.
Corcoran profiles innovators like Houston's DJ Screw, whose music inspired a generation of Third Coast rappers. He also shares stories of immense talent gone too soon.
That's why I have Stevie Ray Vaughan in there. It's a tragic story. He was somebody like Janis Joplin and like Selena, who you wouldn't think are underrated, but they all were taken away at the peak of their careers, and that's gone forever.
Most revealing, Corcoran introduces us to Texas music makers time has forgotten. Take Floyd Tillman. There'd be no Willie Nelson without Tillman. The Houston guitarist was about a decade older than Nelson, and a profound influence on him, as well as Dolly Parton, Merle Haggard, and George Jones. Then there's Waco's Tom Wilson. Wilson was a prolific African-American producer who guided white stars like Bob Dylan and Simon and Garfunkel.
After he did Bob Dylan, he went to MGM Records and produced the first two Velvet Underground records, and he produced the first two or three Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention records. We should know about this guy. Why don't we know about him?
Luckily, now we do. Hadi Mawagdi, KERA News.
Learn more about the true heroes of Texas music at artnseek.org. Partly cloudy skies this evening. There's a chance of rain with a low around 76. Tomorrow, much of the same, a chance of rain with a high near 95. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.